A home is much more than four walls and a roof, isn't it? It's a place to relax and recharge and spend time with friends and family and, of course, a whole lot more. And for you, I am betting that the kitchen is the heart of your home. It is in our home. And if it's not set up to do what you need it to do, it can really be frustrating. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking about kitchens and a whole lot more today, as a matter of fact, with a couple of guests today. Chad Spate with me right now. Chad owns Chad's Design Build in Madison. It used to be Chad's Carpentry. And Chad, great to have you with us. Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Chuck Weidenbach will be joining us as well. And when he gets here, we're going to probably zero in a bit more on kitchens. He has done many, many, many kitchen designs. And so looking forward to hearing from him as well. But Chad, let's talk about melting for a minute.
Sure.
Well, there's a lot of it going on right now. Yeah. So what kinds of issues come up?
Sure. Well, this time of year, the weather plays a big role in the sorts of problems we might see in a home. We didn't have a particularly heavy snow this year.
Right.
And we haven't had the heavy rains yet that we might have when the ground is still frozen or thawing. And so, fortunately, the snow is melting slowly.
Yeah.
And it's an ideal condition. But there's the potential with a sudden heavy rain or with a more rapid melt to start to see some water in our homes, melting into basements through cracks and through window wells. And so it is something that we deal with from time to time. The last few winters have actually been quite severe. And so we help clients with getting water away from the foundation. You always want to look up first to the roof and figure out, start there and try to move water away from the building to minimize the pressure on that foundation.
Yeah. And can you do that now? I mean, when the ground's still frozen? I mean, is there still work that you can do, actually?
Well, there are some things you can do. Certainly, you can make sure that your downspouts are unobstructed, and you can help to divert water further away from the foundation this time of year because the ground is very saturated from all the melting snow. So if you are having problems, you can take those steps on the outside of the home just to divert any rain or melt that's off the roof as far away from the foundation as possible. And, of course, ideally to lower ground, get it beyond any high ground if you can so that the water is not just going to come back and seep in along the foundation. What we often see is because the house is heated, is conditioned, the foundation is kind of the warm, it is a warmer thing in the earth. And so the earth up along the side of a house is going to thaw faster than the ground that is a few feet out. And so if the grading isn't good or if there's snow piled up out there.
Yeah, you can just picture that now, can't you?
Oh, yes.
I would say that you notice that I have a driveway that – paved driveway that runs right up to the house. And you can really see that on the driveway because that, I don't know, 6-8 inches out from the house is always less icy or has no ice.
Correct. Yeah, and there are a variety of reasons that contribute to that. I mean, another thing that's going on is that the sun reflects off of the side of a home and down onto the ground around it. And we see a lot of melt that just comes from that reflective and radiant heat off the building, as well as the fact that just the building itself is warmer. So
I had one thing that doesn't relate to remodeling, but something that I had failed to do, and that was change the filter in my furnace. And I'm just going to bring that up because about 2 months went by, actually, and I always changed every month. Mm-hmm. But it is important to change those filters, is it not?
Correct. Yes, that's Certainly going to contribute to the airflow that you get in your heating system and air conditioning system. A clean filter is particularly important in the summertime just because of air pressures and the way our forced air systems work. But in the winter, it's important to keep the filter clean, too, and you're going to maximize airflow and increase the potential to take those allergens and particles out of the air.
You know what? I would have guessed just the opposite. I would have guessed that the filter was more critical in the wintertime than in the summertime, but you say no. All
right. Yeah, well, it has to do, I mean, so for example, the filter is part of the return air system. You know, when you have the forced air, you're pulling air out of rooms and then you're blowing air into other rooms. And that filter is right there before the return air gets pulled into the furnace and conditioned. And in the summertime, it's really critical that we dehumidify the air. And so the return air is really important, whereas in the winter, you can blow out the heat and not do as much, really, to that air you're pulling in. It's still important,
yeah,
but
it just, interesting.
You know, it's different. So,
Dan in Partyville has a question, so let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are actually moving back to Madison. We're moving on to the east side. And I don't know if you've been over that direction. A lot of the ranch homes, it seems like the closets in two of the bedrooms were kind of an extension of the house as an afterthought. So there's kind of a space underneath that. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. But the inside the closet, the wood along the bottom edge is not wet, but it seems to be spongy, like it might have dry rot. The seller's not willing to do anything. What can I do to fix that?
That's interesting.
And I apologize. I missed a little bit at the beginning of that of your explanation, but it sounds, is there a cantilever involved here?
No, it seems like 90% of the homes along the east side of Milwaukee Street have like the closets in two of the side bedrooms were just kind of attached on the outside of the house, kind of like an afterthought.
Right.
It doesn't even go down to the ground.
So
I'm thinking that moisture must have come up somehow over the years.
Not the
whole floor, it's just the edge.
Okay. Well, there could be a variety of things going on, but so one of the things that happens in a closet or any room that is not actively conditioned by the heating system is that, you know, when you have that little room, which is what a closet is really, a tiny room that is closed, the door is closed, or even if you just had a curtain up, you're not going to be getting the airflow in there that would allow for things like condensation, if it occurs, to dry out. And if you do have a cold spot in that room where it is on the exterior wall, it's not uncommon to see where the warm conditioned air in the house kind of wafts in there, and there is a cold surface and it might condense on it. And so it condenses on that surface when the conditions allow for it. And because there's already a bit of isolation where that room is not really out in the open and getting actively used and heated, there's not as much potential for it to dry out. So that could be what's going on there.
Yeah.
It is something that's fairly common to see, particularly on an exterior closet.
Mm-hmm. So that could be fixed.
So the ways we would look to improve on that, first and foremost, would be to better insulate and air seal the exterior surfaces there.
Underneath there.
So that they're not going to be so cold as to have condensation issues. And we do want to confirm that, in fact, it is condensation. There could be a leak somewhere that is contributing to that moisture. And obviously, if that's the case, we'd want to address that. But typically, the exterior walls with this sort of a problem, what we find is that it's condensation related.
Thank you, Dan, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Brogan, hold on there. Brogan has a question about kitchens, and that brings up our other guest, Chuck Weidenbach, a graduate of the Interior Design Program at Madison College. He's been a Kitchen Ideas Center team member since
1998, Larry.
1998. Well, it's great to have you with us. I know you've been very involved with NARI as well, National Association of Remodeling Industry.
Yep, really have enjoyed my association with them for years. I've got to meet a lot of great people like Chad, and yeah. It's been my honor to do a lot of work in Madison as well since the 90s.
Well, it's great to have you along. You do a lot of work, obviously, with kitchens. So,
kitchens, baths, really anything with a cabinet and a countertop, I can get my hands into that.
I know Brogan's got a question about cabinets, but before we get there, the most common goals in a kitchen remodel, what are those goals?
Well, actually, it's part of our job to figure out what that is for everybody. It actually ends up being a fairly personal process for each particular client. I think that some people want it to look better. Some people want it to function better. Some people feel as if they want to add value to their home. There's really a wide variety of goals that are involved with whenever considering that type of project.
How do you help your clients in that? I mean, I know that's a problem because it hasn't been that long ago that we did a total remodel of the house, but the kitchen obviously was a very important part of it.
Well, forgive the terminology, it tends to be a pretty emotionally charged area. So we tend to take it slowly, get you thinking about what's important to you. It's rarely a fast, quick type of surgical process. We really need to find out who you are, what makes you tick, and what your goals are. It may end up being that your goals might be even a little bit different than what you started out with. So the process is really geared to finding out what matters to each individual client.
And in our case, we did the remodel, and when we were finished with it, there was a wall that was too dark. The kitchen was too dark, and we wound up removing a big chunk of a wall. So a second remodel kind of ensued. Much less money, believe me. We're not talking about a ton of money here, but it made such a huge difference, and it's just something we didn't realize when we were doing the work.
Well, you have to make a lot of decisions as the consumer, and sometimes you have to make decisions about things that you don't have a lot of personal experience with, and that's what we're hoping to help avoid in the future, is perhaps getting through it and saying, well, my goodness, we don't have nearly enough light in this space. So that's again going through it slow and really trying to make sure that your particular needs are met.
It was interesting talk about serendipity or something. Just luckily, we have wood floors, which we were trying to save through the whole house. The one area where we could not save the wood floors was in the kitchen. And so we wound up putting in cork flooring, which is the best thing I ever did in my life, because I spent a lot of time in the kitchen, and standing on those cork floors is a whole lot easier than standing on hardwood.
Well, and along with cork floors, it's again something that really worked for the way that you do life, and the way that you'll always know how you do your life better than I'm going to know how you do your life. And that particular decision has to dovetail with a lot of other decisions to make sure that, say, you have a 150-pound dog. That might be a little bit tough on a cork floor. So in general, it's just making sure that whatever you're getting is going to service you the way you need it to for really the long term. We're looking for these to be long-term solutions for you.
Brogan in Eau Claire has a question. He's been waiting quite a while. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Hi. I am looking to do a kitchen remodel. We've had a few contractors come out and do bids for us. And we did most of our planning at Menards. And I am just debating. We recently found out about some ready-to-assemble cabinets called Lily Ann cabinets. They're supposed to be all plywood construction, and we were just debating on whether to use those or not, and whether we should try and assemble them ourselves or have a contractor do it. The contractor said they would do it, but it would save us a little bit of money, but we're also thinking about doing quartz countertops, so I was kind of like, well, does it make sense to put those assembled cabinets versus as far as quality wise with the quartz countertops? So
well, I think it's a valid question on a lot of levels. First of all, I don't know enough about that particular brand to really kind of say whether or not it's appropriate build-wise to put quartz on it. I would say that if you're going to put something of that kind of weight, you had best be very careful about how they get together and how they're put together and how they're installed. The ready-to-assemble cabinetry, I mean, it can be made to be a long-term solution construction-wise. Sometimes finish is something that gets a little bit in the way occasionally. But I would say that I wouldn't skimp on the build. I would actually make sure that those are put together in a way that they're not going to come back apart. Structurally, you're going to need that to hold a lot of weight above that. So I would just say, if you want to save a couple of bucks, probably the assembly of those cabinets is not necessarily going to be a part of it. And it might even be something worthwhile to look at assembled cabinetry, something that comes to you ready to go and ready to be installed. But again, I'm not exactly sure of what your particular situation and things are, you know, what's in your consideration.
Yeah, we definitely, we've looked at the, like, they come to us pre-assembled as well. And the savings isn't that great. It was just something where we were considering it, and I was like, well, I was ironic because we were talking about it just this morning, and then I was listening to WPR, and here you guys were talking about kitchens. So I was like, well, I'll give them a call. And
and find out. Yeah, why not?
I would add that what we've typically found when we've had clients considering the that sort of cabinetry that has to be assembled, you know, the labor cost of putting things like that together often is as much, if not higher, than the cost of having them assembled in a factory situation, the typical cabinet maker cabinet delivered ready to install. But it is an opportunity for a homeowner who's either a do-it-yourselfer or who, you know, wants to save some money by supplying a cabinet but assembling it themselves. You know, that I think is where you might be able to have some sweat equity in the process. But again, Chuck's points about, you know, making sure they're properly put together to hold the counter and then for long-term durability and happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for calling, Brogan. Appreciate your call. Talking today about home improvement and zeroing in a little bit on kitchen remodeling with our two guests today, Chuck Weidenbach, one of our guests today, very involved with NARI, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, and has been a Kitchen Ideas Center team member since 1998. Chad Spate owns Chad's Design Build, formerly Chad's Carpentry. Great to have both of them with us. And we have open lines, so we'll get you on pretty quickly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and post your questions or your comments there, or even photos. Sometimes we've had some pretty good photos that really helped Chad, I know, in the past, make some recommendations because he could see kind of what was going on. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Milwaukee Repertory Theater presents the world premiere of the play Five Presidents. It's about the meeting of America's most exclusive club, the ex-presidents. That play brings together Presidents Ford, Reagan, Carter, Bush Sr., and Clinton, all gathered for Nixon's funeral. Doesn't that sound interesting? Playwright Rick Cleveland joins Kathleen to talk about it. That's today at 2 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Right now, getting great advice for successful remodeling projects, particularly kitchen remodeling projects, from our guests, Chuck Weidenbach of the Kitchen Ideas Center and Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build. And again, join us at 800-642-1234. You can post a Facebook question and photo, as a matter of fact, on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Email from Catherine: we need to replace our Formica countertops because they are scratched and worn. The kitchen gets a lot of use because I cook daily. I love to cook. Can you please discuss the pros and cons of granite, Corian, and quartz? I'd like something that is durable, reasonably easy to care for, and that can take a lot of kitchen activity. Pots and pans, piling up, sliding counters, and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, part of that, too, is that we could take all of your time and the successive people's time on that. I would say that one of the things would be there are positives and there are challenges to anything that you choose. Among, you know, the things that she is looking at, there are cost issues that will eventually come into play. And durability is an extremely subjective thing. Something that someone might find durable, like a quartz material, might not necessarily like how it seams together or how the pattern might get disrupted. I have Corian in my house. I love what it does for me. And there's sometimes some scratching that can happen with that. And it's not as applicable in darker colors sometimes. So each thing will probably give and take away. So part of it is to sit down and kind of talk about, again, it sounds like a bit of a broken record. But again, each person has a different interpretation of those particular types of material. If you like wild and unpredictable chaos, there a natural stone is going to be the one to give you that kind of subtlety and that kind of interest. Plus, there are some predictable ways that it's going to wear, predictable things that it's going to do well. Each one of those particular types of granite, corian, quartz, or more specifically natural stone, solid surface, or quartz materials will each have some really nice things to suggest it. If I was to give her some generic advice from that, I'd say consider quartz. It's the one that I think is going to have the most positives potentially for what she mentioned in that email. And I think that at least it would be a great place to start. And I can at least feel as if that would be a good beginning piece of advice.
Uh-huh. I would recommend not using a very dark color like black, which is what I have in my kitchen. And it shows every stain, every water drop. And
well, only toast crumbs from 50 yards, Larry. Otherwise, you know,
really it's kind of black and sparkly, you know, one of those kinds of, oh, my goodness me. It's not something that I was... that I would do again. Let's put it that way.
And by the way, I think the worst thing any of us ever hear is that if you had just told us X, we never would have done Y. So we love to try and make sure to get through as many of those things on the front end. So.
Oh, man. Ken and Monroe up next. Hi, Ken. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How you doing today?
Great.
Thanks.
The question I've got is there a service out there person contractor? I'm going to be working on a 100-plus-year-old house out in the country. I am fairly ignorant, but I am a hard worker. Is there somebody out there that, you know, gives advice, just kind of like what you were talking about there, without having to wait for the call-in shows, that, you know, in my mind, I'm working on it for the entire summer, and, you know, step A, I go, I do it, then I bring the contractor in. Okay, step B, C, and fix what you did wrong on step A. Are there people out there that provide this service?
Well, it's a good question. I don't think that there are a lot of people out there that you can hire to be essentially a remodeling consultant, if you will, which is, it sounds like that's what
sounds
you
like what
might
he
want.
Wants. Yeah.
But there might be someone in your area that is willing to essentially perform that role. I know that when we work with our clients, it is a two-step process where we have a design contract with them, and so essentially we are a paid consultant. We're helping them to figure out what is possible and what's it really going to cost, and that way we can provide professional expertise and quality time with a homeowner, and then they don't have to hire us to necessarily do the work, you know, so we can develop a plan together and be paid for that. And so, you know, if you were to find a design build firm, they might be able to do that, to develop that plan with you and then help you decide what you want to do yourself and what you might want to hire a professional to do. We do have a number of clients over the years who have had a fair amount of sweat equity in their projects where they've wanted to, you know, tear out their cabinets and they've wanted to paint the walls and maybe do a few other odds and ends. And, willing to do it, but we're happy to work with the client that way. So it's a matter of finding someone that suits your needs. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to a Facebook question from Sandy. I'd like your advice on installing engineered hardwood floors in a kitchen dining room in regards to durability to spills, especially cats and dog traffic. Also, any name brand suggestions would be welcome for engineered hardwood floors.
Well, so that's a good question, and it depends on what we're talking about by engineered hardwood, because a lot of engineered flooring or faux wood flooring is really just a photograph of wood on some sort of a hardboard, and there's it's snapped together or glued down, and these floors are popular, but I personally am not a big fan. But every, as Chuck said earlier, you know, it really comes down to what you want in your home and what are the benefits and features that you're looking for. There are some engineered floors that have a thin veneer of hardwood on the top. And where I've seen problems with those is people put them in and they think, you know, I've got a hardwood floor. They do. They have a thin veneer of hardwood as opposed to the traditional solid planks of hardwood. Well, you can't refinish this floor. You certainly can't sand it. You might be able to lay a new coat, you know, clean it and buff it and then recoat it. But anything beyond that, you're not going to be able to do because you will literally sand through the veneer. So rather than a 100-year floor that you can refinish, you've got a 10 to 20-year floor, if that, and then you're going to have to replace it.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are the sorts of things you want to be thinking about. The one other comment I would quickly make is that some people have not been happy with these floors that are essentially floating floors. Again, sometimes you snap them together and then any variation in elevation underneath that, little dips or even the floor itself may create a little bit of a bubble or pocket. And then when you step on it, you feel it fall beneath your feet.
Yeah.
And it's not a very comforting sensation, but it is something that tends to come with that type of floor.
Hmm. Chuck, you had something to add to that, too.
Well, I think a couple of things, too. And one thing that Chad mentioned that I'd like to expand on, when he's talking about lifespan, I think this is a big thing when you're talking about cost and really the viability of your project. Do you know how long you want this thing to work? And there can be differences. If you're looking to sell your house tomorrow, this might be a much different type of project than the house that you intend to live as long as possible. So when you're looking at these types of materials, think about the lifespan you intend to get out of them. I do know that if somebody does a kitchen, and if they feel as if they need to do that kitchen in the next 10 to 15 years, they're going to feel like they just did that kitchen. What's wrong with it? So I think that expectation is a big piece of it. Also, when she says dog and cat traffic, what kind of dog and what kind of cat are we talking about? So each one of those things will also have its own stressors on that particular product.
Yeah, I think with a dog, especially if you get a big dog, you want some good quality wood underneath on that
big
floor.
Active dog. You may want some rugs on top of that quality wood finish.
Yeah. Joe in Hillsborough is up next. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Well, I had a remodel, and we've got a utility room that ended up so that our dryer would be most easily vented into a garage situation. Now, I understand there are going to be some humidity problems, and that's not ideal, but I'm struggling with how to vent this dryer other than through the garage. So I was hoping for some help with that.
Sure. Well, if you were to just take it the easiest path into the garage, how far would that be from an exterior wall in either direction?
Approximately 12 feet.
Okay. So one possibility is simply to bring the ductwork into the garage, but then take it, you know, immediately out of one of those side walls with a 90-degree turn. And I probably would recommend that just because, you know, when we dump humidity, I mean, a lot of humidity comes out of a dryer vent. And to have that dumping into your garage is probably going to, you know, cause some other issues that
you're not going to like.
Right. So I think that's, but it's perfectly acceptable. And it often, you know, you might want to build a little enclosure or something to protect that pipe so it's not going to get crushed or bent. And I would generally recommend a rigid pipe.
And would you have, now there we got a fan issue or the vent. I mean, do you need some sort of booster fan or to get the material out?
You might need that. I mean, certainly a 90-degree turn is equivalent to about 10 feet of straight pipe in resistance. And
okay.
So, you know,
so it's like 22 feet in this case.
Right, that's correct. And that's a long, long haul for a dryer vent. And, of course, the more resistance you have and the harder it is to push that moisture out, then the harder the dryer is going to have to work to dry your clothes. And so it is possible to have a booster install, but then the issue we get into with dryers is all the lint that tends to get into that system. It complicates things. It's not just, say, an exhaust fan out of a bathroom or something like that, where you're really just dealing with the humidity. So it can be a little tricky, and there's not,
I would certainly want a booster fan if it was me, if you have to do it that way.
Right.
Yeah, that's for sure. Good luck, Joe. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Muskego, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I recently had a carpenter put in a island exhausting vent fan over my range.
Yep.
And that was last summer. So over the winter, when the temperature dropped to below 30 to about 10 degrees, I would get condensation dripping back in, down the vent pipe. Basically, it runs straight up through the ceiling.
Oh.
Right.
And when I look up there, it looks like you just put, you know, a 6-inch duct, maybe 18 inches above the roof, and it has a rain cap on it. So I'm kind of thinking maybe this needs some sort of special roof capping on it, but I'm not sure whether to contact a roofer or a HVAC person or something.
Well,
else.
Typically the best way to address this, and you know, sometimes it's a little bit of trial and error, but typically what we do, best practice is, when you go up into the cold attic of a home with a humidity venting duct, you have got to air seal and insulate that duct so that...
I don't have an attic. I have like a cathedral ceiling, and that's probably an issue on its own because there's not much space between the ceiling and the roof.
Okay.
I know it was insulated around, you know, in that space.
Okay. Well, so because the issue that we're fighting against is that the metal that is in that duct is going, once it gets cold and the humidity or the warm, moist air hits it, it will condense and come back down. And it used to be people would try to put little condensation loops in it, and then what we would find is those would fill up with water and then freeze, and then you wouldn't have any ventilation at all. When you're right on the roof like that, I mean, maybe typically what we put on is a roof hood that is mounted right onto the roof deck. It doesn't, you know, stick up 18 inches as I think I heard you describe.
Yeah.
And so what that does is that really minimizes the amount of metal there, allows the air to get out quickly once it gets to that cold surface. And that's really what you want to do. You want to minimize the amount of cold metal that allows the potential for that condensation to form. So I would alter that system so that you've got that cap right on the roof, and there are, you know, pre-engineered, you know, you can pick them up at a duct wholesaler or at a home improvement store, and there are particular hoods designed for 6-inch or 8-inch round duct. And that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Jim. Thank you for calling. Dorothy in Onalaska, it is your turn. Hi, Dorothy. Thank you for calling.
And thank you for taking my call. I think I know the answer before I even question anybody about this. We purchased a home about 3 years ago, and the work area in the kitchen all the way to the dining area to the hall is about, oh, I'd say 25 feet or longer. And it's all ceramic, beveled edge, ceramic tile with a beveled edge.
Wow.
And I was told, well, you have to tear it out. You have to tear it out. I'm wondering if the grouting could be filled up, filled in, and put some kind of a flooring over it that is more comfortable to walk on.
Hmm. Well, Dorothy, I'd probably say it this way, and I would consider myself dangerous with flooring, so I would at least put that caveat out there. I think if you increase the amount of grout, and I wouldn't be surprised if I wasn't completely correct on this, but that is another wear. That's something that can wear off over time. It's not necessarily.
That's what I'm afraid of.
And I think that if you put it in sort of like in that almost that funnel shape, it'll come up in fits and starts. So I don't know. And besides, it may look really funky by the time it's on there too. So those would be huge grout lines.
Excuse me for interrupting. I have an 80-year-old husband that has always been a do-it-yourselfer and does very good work. Oh, I could take that up. I could take that. No, you're not taking it up. Because I was quoted $600 to $1,000 or more. I don't want to do this. Does anyone want to purchase my home?
I think that's a different program, but I do appreciate the sort of the creative thinking on that.
Oh, boy.
I thought, maybe there's something new out there.
Well, I don't think
right,
I have an easy answer.
Thank you
so
very much,
yeah, thanks very much for calling. You know, I suppose you can put some rugs down on it. Or
by the way, you can try it. I mean, if the other alternative is to take up the floor, it's actually a fairly low-risk type of thing to try. It might, again, it might just speed up the process of taking that floor out, but it's probably not going to necessarily hurt anything if you try it in a small spot. I think it would separate the answers out very quickly, though.
So to speak. Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Dorothy. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Talking home improvement. Zeroed in a bit on kitchen remodeling, but hey, we're taking on everything today with our two guests, Chuck Weidenbach, who is with the Kitchen Ideas Center, and Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at home remodeling and repair, zeroing in a bit on kitchen remodeling today with our two guests, Chuck Weidenbach and Chad Spade. Chad owns Chad Design Build in Madison. Chuck works been a member of the Kitchen Ideas Center team since 1998. So been doing a lot of great work with kitchens over the years. So it's nice to have them both with us. You can call at 800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post a photo or a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I got an email from Kay, who's going to be remodeling their kitchen to make it more functional and up-to-date. It's a 1970s home, so I expect it's a 1970s kitchen. I don't need high-end stuff. I do a lot of canning and cooking, and I'd like your opinion about countertop and sink surfaces. I want things that are easy to keep clean, low maintenance, and resistant to stains, which I can feature stains when you're doing a lot of canning in particular. Our water's hard, and we have a softener, but water stains may be an issue in the sink. We have porcelain now, but I can't get the marks from washing pots and pans off of it, and the shine is long gone. What would be your recommendation there? Chuck, start with you.
Well, I'd say if you're looking at a lot of canning and cooking, what you're gravitating towards are products that are going to just take the general chaos of what's going to happen in a kitchen. So one of the things I would probably say is that for canning, using a lot of things that are strong colors, grapes potentially, you know, things along that level.
Tomatoes.
I would say that part of that is that with a, like a natural stone product, it's just unpredictable on what it's going to do. It's not a predictable level of performance. So moving more towards a solid surface or perhaps a quartz material for somebody who's really using the kitchen tends to make a lot of sense. And for as the 1970s home goes, there may be some of these materials that look a little more formal. Maybe you may be looking for something that's informal. Do you want a lighter or a darker color? Those are, again, big considerations between solid surface and quartz. And also, when you're talking about canning, I would look towards finding out just how much canning you do. Is it a significant part of your life in that part of the year? Is this something that is going to have to take a significant amount of water, which you're going to have with canning, with heat? You're going to have that low heat also. Each one of these materials has different ways in which it's impacted by those actions. So, again, a whole nother squad of potential questions. Most of the sinks we're doing right now, for whatever reason right now, we're doing a lot of stainless steel, a lot of 18 and 16 gauge stainless steel.
Yeah, and I like stainless steel.
It seems to be something that hits a nice cost point, and it's people know how to use it, sort of like laminate. People know how to use it. Yeah. Some of these other materials, it's kind of a little bit of a learning curve, but we're doing more quartz sinks right now. Quartz sinks are a composite type of sink. They come in several different colors. People are enjoying that. I'm not doing as many porcelain on cast iron for just what Kay is saying, in that there's a wear layer on that, and once that wear layer is gone,
it's
pretty much, it's just like if you wear down a laminate, it just, what we call it, it uglies out. It's still a sink, it still holds water, it just, it's not cleanable after a certain point.
You know, the another thing that comes to my mind, because I've done a lot of canning over the years too, and that's getting rid of that moisture in vent fans. And you know, that's something, especially at that time of the year. It's usually you're doing it in the heat of summer.
Yes.
And so I would, you know, I think long and hard, if you don't have a good vent system,
little physical comfort might be something on the agenda. Oh, and the hard water, the water around here is like beat you up hard. It is. There's not a lot of soft and cold water. Chad may have something to say, but I don't find that a lot. So another thing would be hard water, by the way, can attach to anything. I've seen it attached to quartz. I've seen it attached to Corian. The best thing possible for hard water, no matter what your countertop, is really keep them as dry as possible. When you let water sit, And it dries and it leaves a lot of that residue, it can bond to whatever countertop you have. So I've seen it with everything.
I have a roll of paper towels on the counter, and I can't tell you how many times a day that the countertop gets wiped off.
Well, that black shiny countertop, Larry, is going to just nag at you like a drop of water on your forehead.
Yeah, I can tell you, I go through a lot of paper toweling.
American industry thanks you. That's fantastic.
There we go. Robin in La Crescent, Minnesota has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Robin. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have an old house that I recently bought within the last 7 years. Built in 1910. It was slipped, and the floating floor was put throughout the opened-up kitchen into the living room. It's not a big house. However, the flooring, especially around the appliances, will separate in the winter. And therefore, there's always like a gap, so I'm never really getting, it's probably filling up with dirt and grime and everything else, and it just does not look good. It will probably expand back during the summer, but then this will happen every year. So my question to you is, do I get replacement boards? I do have some, and just put new boards in, or should I think about replacing the flooring into something else?
Well, so one question I have for you is, do you say a floating floor is it a hardwood floor?
It's like a pergo floor.
Okay.
It's a manufactured floor.
Okay.
And I assume that that's considered a floating floor because there's no glue or paste or anything.
Okay. Yeah, well, it sounds like it's just a lower end product, and so you're seeing some of these problems, and you may not have much of a choice but to consider replacing it. But the reason I ask the question is because when you describe the gaps in the floor, it's not uncommon with just a hardwood floor, which is might be a 100-year-old floor. Or what was in that kitchen originally, you are going to see gaps and then you're going to in the winter, and then those are often going to disappear or minimize in the summer months, and that movement of the wood is somewhat inevitable, depending on how you condition your home and how leaky it is, and just kind of how the house behaves and how it was built. How much movement there is, deflection in the floor. So these are all issues that are somewhat unique to individual homes, but it is true that a lower-cost floor is going to probably present more challenges. And there aren't many things that you can really do to rehab that, say, a pergo floor that I'm aware of. So good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Robin, for calling. Patricia in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Aloha, Larry. We're in Hawaii.
Yes, good to hear your voice.
Thanks for taking my call. If the gentleman who had his cantilevered closets is still listening, one stopgap measure can be setting a couple of these small containers of closet dehumidifiers or whatever they're called that have the desiccant crystals in them, and they absorb so much moisture. And you can either pour out the moisture and refill some, or others just replace the container.
That's good advice. I mean, those are products and tools that are out there that can help to deal with moisture and problem areas, and that's an excellent tip, certainly.
Oh, thanks, Patricia.
Thank you.
I was thinking about all the gang that we were in Hawaii with, and it was just as you say, it was just a year ago, and as a matter of fact, I talked to Peggy Hageman from the tour company just yesterday.
And she was a wonderful guide for us.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was. Well, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Like to do that again. Mark in Cashton, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Yes, hi, Larry. I live in a house that was built in 97, and most of our home is oak plank flooring, and it's a beautiful floor, and it's starting. I have three large dogs, 75 pounds area, and they tend to spin their wheels when squirrels go running by, etc., and it's not digging into the floor, but the floor seems to be drying out or showing signs of little rises at the cracks. These are 2.25-inch oak slats, and I'm not sure how to go about refinishing and putting another protective coat on there. I don't know quite where to begin here.
Those good questions. Well, with a solid oak plank floor, I mean, one of the great things about it is it can be sanded completely and then a new finish applied to it. And it sounds like that might be what you should do at this point if you're getting those little ridges where the boards are coming together. It'll just give you a more uniform surface to refinish. It is possible sometimes to simply clean, buff, and recoat a floor if the finish looks good and you don't see splotchiness or unevenness or a lot of scratches in it. But that's a decision that either you or a professional refinisher could make together as to how far you want to go with the application of a new finish. And then there are a variety of products that can be used. You know, the old-fashioned product was a polyurethane, and there it's a very, you know, noxious. There are a lot of VOCs, and it takes a long time typically for that to dry. So there are a number of waterborne finishes out on the market that we often use and recommend. And the one that I actually tend to recommend is one called Traffic. That's made by Bona, and it's a Swedish finish, and it it's an excellent way to go, and typically three coats of that. Whether you are just buffing and refinishing, or if you're doing a full sand and refinish. So that's what I would recommend.
And three coats, and that's going to take the dogs and the traffic.
Well,
as good as you're going to probably get.
Right. I mean, it's something that will show wear. It will, the more that you abuse it, the more that it, you know, it is something that will need to be refinished and maintained, but that's the beauty of a solid wood floor is that you actually get to do that.
Yeah.
And then you can protect it with some other, you know, as we talked earlier about putting down some area rugs and things. I mean, certainly that's another way to go if you want to give them, you know, something else to spin their wheels on.
Yeah, prime squirrel zones should have some of those throw rugs down, too.
And they do. And they do. But the first one throws the rug out of the way, and the other two come spinning around the corner.
Well, see, now that they have procedures now that they've made
up. Oh, yeah, there's a pecking order.
Yeah, so. I'm sure there's always one that gets the lead.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we've got lots of different things to talk about here. We got to talk about radon remediation. We're going to talk about some lumber liquidator issues, and we're going to talk about some stripping paint off floors. And we've got another couple of kitchen questions as well. So we'll do all those things, but we also need to take a look at the news and the weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and we're going to do that right now. Chuck Weidenbach, one of our guests today, been a Kitchen Ideas Center team member since 1998. Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build in Madison, Chad's Design Build. And they'll be with us right till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, and then we will be right back. Stay with us.
The artistry of young musicians.
So great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Some of the best investments we can make on our house also helps us minimize our impact on the environment. And with all the different options to weigh it, I know it's hard sometimes to make a smart decision. That's why we have smart people, a couple of smart guys with us right now, as a matter of fact. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Great to have you, Chad. Thanks for coming by today.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
And Chuck Weidenbach. Chuck is a graduate of the Interior Design Program at Madison College. He's been a design specialist at the Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison since 1998. And Chuck, thank you again.
Well, thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.
Really appreciate having you guys with us. And, you know, we haven't mentioned green a whole lot about green and eco-friendly materials. And I know, Chad, that this is a big interest of yours.
Yes, it is. Well, so I have to say that with kitchens, something that we've seen a lot of in the last 5 years is, you know, taking the existing cabinetry and repurposing it. Maybe that means just new doors. Maybe it's just refinishing what you have. There are a lot of ways to approach that, but to the larger point of it's generally better to reuse something if you can. Mm-hmm. When you can renovate a home in a way that allows you to repurpose or reuse a lot of the materials, that's a great way to go. And sometimes just for budgetary reasons, that's what needs to happen because average cost of projects. Maybe some of the listeners are interested in this. There's a national survey every year of what various types of kitchen renovation projects cost. And the kind of low impact rehab, reuse, kitchen remodel can still be close to a $20,000 proposition. And when you tear everything out and new everything, for a moderate range, the average cost on that is in the high 50s you know, $50,000 to $60,000, and it can be more. And there is a high-end kitchen, average cost over $100,000. So it's kind of crazy how much money you can spend on a kitchen. But at the end of the day, you really do get what you pay for. And sometimes what makes sense is to reuse a fair number of the things that are in there. Paints and finishes are another area when we talk about green. Previous caller, I mentioned VOCs and maybe wanting to avoid VOCs in a urethane. The paints we use, we often use a no VOC paint, which means that you're not going to notice much of an odor.
Yeah.
And some people have very serious reactions, and negative health impacts from exposure to these volatile organic compounds that are in a lot of the materials. We also typically will try to look for materials that don't have formaldehyde in them. That's
different things to think about there.
Correct.
When you guys are doing a remodel, I know there are times when something comes up, where the heck or what the heck is this? Was this behind the wall or whatever it might be? Unpleasant surprises, let's call them.
Right.
What are the most common culprits from that?
Well, so in an older home, the things that are the most costly to deal with would be an unexpected plumbing pipe or an unexpected heat vent or a heat pipe if you've got a boiler. So these can be expensive things to deal with. We also sometimes in remodeling we uncover an old remodel that maybe wasn't done properly. You find where, say, a header or something has been hacked through, and you need to address it once you uncover it. So these sorts of surprises can be more common in an older home or in a home that you can just see a lot of do-it-yourself work has happened.
Yeah.
And that's why good planning is important. I mean, Chuck has referenced this in the first hour of the show, that it's really important to ask a lot of questions and think carefully about what you're getting into before you start a renovation project, particularly a kitchen. And that's where dealing with a professional can really help, because we kind of know what you might encounter. And we always say to our clients, we really try to let them know what we don't know. Because there really aren't ever surprises. It's just there are unknowns.
Yeah,
and
okay.
An experienced remodeler can identify the unknowns and prepare the client for that. And then it's early in the project that you're going to figure out what you don't know and figure out then what it's going to cost to deal with what is there.
I know we looked at magazines a lot, just for the planning of other kitchens, and went online a little bit. What do you have ideas, or what do you typically tell somebody to do in that regard?
Well, normally if somebody's looking at a kitchen or a bath project, they have invested some of their own time into it. They have distinct opinions on what's going to work and what's not going to work, at least initially. And so I've had people come in with magazines, with books. Most of my clients right now seem to be coming in with house accounts, H-O-U-Z-Z, and some Pinterest. So there's more online resources. More times now, people who I'm working with can send me images through email, even text me something so that I can see what they're looking at. And then we can ask, what about this picture do you like? Because every picture has things that I think are kind of okay cost-wise, and some things are brutal cost-wise. So it actually helps narrow down the communication. Again, establish priority for what you truly want. And so it's a good tool. I would recommend having some way to communicate what you like to whomever you're working for. It gets things moving in a better direction faster.
Becca from the different kind of topic here in a way, Becca from Facebook wondered about keeping water away from the house. She currently has a narrow garden running the length of the house, and she's having a new patio installed in the backyard and would like to remove the garden and have the patio right up against the house. Is this okay as long as they slope it away from the house, or is it actually better to have the garden there to absorb the water?
That's a great question. There's nothing wrong with having a patio come right up to the house. And the general thing that we want to be concerned about, no matter what material is at the edge of a home, is we want the siding material to be ideally 8 inches above where the grade begins. And then you want to have a gentle slope away from the home from that point out. So that's the challenge. And so that means you're going to have a little bit of the foundation exposed typically, and you're often going to be a couple of steps down from the floor. But that is what helps to avoid those problems with the exterior walls getting wet.
John in Cedarburg has been waiting a long time. John, thanks for waiting. Hello.
That's all right. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, guest. I was in a big box store, and I noticed they have sump covers now, for specifically for radon gas. And they also have a ventilation kit sold separately. Are those new to do-it-yourselfers? And can you tell me when I need or when I might need ventilation versus just a cover? Because, you know, I've got exposed basement, so I'm not too concerned. I've had it checked, and I'm below the levels that they say you're supposed to take action. But could you talk about that?
Sure. Well, those are great questions. And so the most important thing that you just mentioned is that you have tested for radon. And the fact is that, as you probably know, but I want all of our listeners to know, if you don't test for radon, you aren't going to know whether or not you have it. It is an odorless gas, and it is the second leading cause of lung cancer in the U.S., second only to smoking. So a lot of us get exposed to radon in our homes or in the buildings that we're in. And if you know you have it, then there are ways to deal with it. Now, I have to say, I was not aware of do-it-yourselfer kits in the big box stores. I haven't noticed that. But there are a variety of cautions I would give. I mean, when you're dealing with, if you do have a radon remediation problem, that's one of those things that I would tend to defer to a professional to install the system. But one of the things that I would just mention, you're always going to want the fan to be outside of the envelope of the home. And the reason for that is that if there is a crack in the housing, or if the fan, something happens to that fan, then at least the pipe that leads from the floor of your basement out beyond the envelope of your home will be sealed, barring there being a crack in that. But typically the crack happens in the fan housing. So, It is not a safety hazard if the fan is outside, or you're less likely to have a failure. So a professional will typically do that. And I'm not sure what sort of advice and materials you would have with a do-it-yourself system. But there's also generally a little liquid-filled tube on the side of that pipe, not far after it comes out of the ground, often at eye level, and it is there to be an indicator that you actually have negative pressure in the pipe, which means the fan is working and it is sucking air out from below the slab. And then we always recommend a plug-in radon detector, just as something that's there that's going to give you a little LED digital readout of what your radon levels are, and that lets you know, too, that you know, your radon levels are not in a danger zone. Mm. So
there we go. Tia in Toma, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I actually have two separate questions for you guys. The first one, we're going to be moving our island in our kitchen, and I was just wondering what your suggestions are for patching the hole where the water pipes come through the floor.
How far are you moving your island?
We're actually rotating it and moving it over a few feet.
Okay, and you're going to still have a sink coming through that?
Yes.
Okay. So what kind of flooring do you have?
Laminate.
Okay. Well, with laminate, and again, with the caveat that I'm not exactly a flooring expert, I've seen whenever there's any kind of repair done with a laminate floor, you're actually removing a tremendous amount of laminate around it and then trying to piece other pieces of laminate into it. And that's hoping, of course, that you have matching material, which if you try and go back and purchase it, might not be the case. So, and you're taking
it. We do have matching.
You do? Okay. So probably what you're going to do is you're going to clear out a significant amount of space around that in order to put this laminate back in. And then, again, hopefully you'll just have, you know, enough of that extra to make that work.
Okay. And then my second question, back kind of to the green thing, we have paint on our hardwood floors going up the stairs and all throughout the upstairs. There's not very good ventilation up there. I was just wondering what your suggestions would be for stripping those floors.
Oh, what do you think, Chad?
Well, so you have to be careful of contaminants, and so you want to check for lead, and generally I would recommend considering having it professionally tested, but there are some kits out there that a homeowner can use, and the biggest threat, there are two ways that lead becomes hazardous to someone that's trying to remove it. If you're sanding it and the particulate goes into the air and you're breathing it in and ingesting it, that's bad. And then the other thing is if you're heating it up to remove it, that can, cause, again, it vaporizes it and it can be very dangerous. So, I am not we typically bring in some trade partners to deal with these things depending on what we determine to be any potential contamination. And then so depending on that, there's different courses of action. But it is just something you have to use great care in doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And Kelly in Milwaukee, you are next. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. You guys, this may be a silly question, but I'm considering, we've got some really nice granite flooring, 12 by 12 by like a half inch tiles in the basement, and I was thinking of using those as countertop material. Is there a way that can be done effectively, or is that just an all-around bad idea?
Well, I would actually be looking to find out more of what you meant by effectively. So let me tell you a little bit about this. I've seen how this can look years down the road. So part of it ends up being that laying down any kind of tile for a countertop, first of all, you have a lot of grout, and sometimes that can be just a cleaning issue as time goes on. But what happens with the granite tile that I've seen is the bed that it's put on as a countertop is not necessarily always properly supported underneath. It actually takes a lot of pre-work in order to make that a long-lasting solution. And then what happens is that the countertop becomes out of level a little bit over time, which can cause areas for water and liquid to sort of sit in, or even it just begins to sag. So how I've seen this happen over maybe 10 to 15 year time periods is that it sags, it gets things into it that actually begin to discolor the material. And also the cuts have to be pretty good. The last thing too is that you have to build up a pretty thick edge to get that mud set on there. So you may end up having a big honking wood molding on the front of it in order to kind of give you that sort of finished look. I'd say you need a little bit of luck and you need a lot of pre-work in order to make that happen. And how the sink is mounted is also another big deal. If you have a big, heavy sink sitting on this mud set, sometimes that can be another long-term problem. And so if that had been something that we were doing, I would be preparing you to have problems long after I'm paid.
All right. I think I've got your opinion on that.
What do you really think?
What do I really think? Yeah. I've just seen failure as time goes on.
Use these tiles. I mean, it's a great pattern.
Yeah.
It's a dark green with these almost celestial swirls in it, and then every once in a while it looks like drops of ox blood.
Well, the one thing here is that if it's something that you're interested in doing, the worst that can happen is it'll fail. I mean, really, you can look at it that way, too. And if you already have the material and you have the interest to move forward, there's nothing that really stops you from doing it. It's just if you had the expectation that it was going to last forever, that's where I would probably at least have some other information for you.
And I would add that, and this is something we've done on some kitchens that I've worked together with Chuck on, and some homeowners really like having different surfaces in different parts of the kitchen. And so one way that you might help assure longer-term happiness with the use of this material would be to use it if there's a separate counter space area that is not right next to the sink, if there is an island or just a separate area, say around the stove or something,
That's
a great idea.
You know, and then you get to utilize some of the material, and then maybe you still have some left over. So,
And dry areas, much better. Water always wins, near the sink. So,
yeah.
Okay, and that's even with the treatment that you're supposed to redo on granite, like a couple of times a year?
Yep. I think that just because you put that sealant layer on it, it doesn't necessarily... It gives you more time to get the staining agents or another material on top of that countertop. It doesn't necessarily make it impossible for the finish to be affected.
Okay. All right. Good. That's what I need to know.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I want to go back to the dryer to vent issue. Marita called to recommend a dryer that actually collects the water in a reservoir, so there is no need to vent it. The brand is...
That's a Miele.
Miele. And what do you think about Miele?
Well, that sounds certainly possible. I mean, we're talking about a lot of water, but there are dishwashers that do this, and so it is a technology and an approach that can be utilized. I know Bosch dishwashers tend to condense out the humidity during the drying cycle and drain it just the way it drains all the other liquid. So this might be an effective way to handle it. I'm just not familiar with it in clothes dryers.
Well, I would say it's a pretty high-end company, so I wouldn't be shocked that this would be a feature that would come. A lot of innovation comes in on the high end, too.
Yeah.
That's something that people sometimes don't always know, or the new and interesting things are going to come in at the highest price point before they sort of trickle into the rest of the marketplace. Miele's a big deal in terms of a technology and their ability to figure out some new ways to do things. That would not shock me at all. It's just you will pay a pretty penny to get one of those in your home.
Yeah,
you will. We had an email from Jennifer in Lewiston, Minnesota, who said, just finished a total kitchen remodel in our old farmhouse. Yay! Question. Are laminate countertops now designed to take the heat of average appliances like the toaster oven, the toaster, the waffle iron? These appliances make the countertop very warm to the touch.
I would say a resounding maybe, because I think with laminate in general, I would still put insulating layers between heat-producing appliances and the laminate itself. Laminate can be scorched, just like anything else. I remember seeing old countertops from the 70s with cigarette burns on the end of it. You could still do that with the laminate today. I think most of the innovation is in surface texture, and it's in look. I mean, it's not necessarily in performance. It has a lot more to do with aesthetic qualities.
Certainly gotten a lot more popular again.
Oh, yeah. It's a price point that I think people find very digestible. And there's some really interesting things that you can do with laminate, especially in a more contemporary environment, too. So,
well, this has been a lot of fun. We had we had a lot of great questions.
Absolutely.
And I really enjoyed our conversation today. So, Chad, are you online? You've got a...
Yes, our website is chadsdesignbuild.com.
Chadsdesignbuild.com, and I'm almost positive that Judith's got that up on our Facebook page. And Chuck, you have a site.
Yep, kitchenideaswithanscenter.com. That's available for you 24 hours, of course, and you get a little bit to know about our company and some of the projects that we've done. So,
Ideas with an S, center.com. Center.com. There we go. And we've got that up as well on our Facebook page. Thanks, guys. I hope we have a chance to do this again. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it. Chuck Weidenbach from the Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison, and Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. That was a lot of fun, and we'll do some more. You can rest assured of that. Got a garden talk coming up tomorrow. Oh, my good friend Patty Nagai will stop by, UW Extension horticulturist from Racine County. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.